Well, hello. It's Sunday afternoon, October 6, 2005, and this is Harry Brown with my good friend John B. Chandler, and we are here for the Money Show to talk about your finances, your savings, your investments, your speculations, anything having to do with money. And I think we have a very interesting show lined up for you today, especially if you have children. But even if you don't have children, I think you'll find it interesting, because we are going to talk about the education of people on money, specifically children. And this was all triggered by a headline on the cover of Barron's. John, what did it say?
The cover of the October 17th Barron's reads as follows. Headline, your worst nightmare. Rich parents say their biggest fear is having their children turn into the next Paris Hilton. Subheadline, what wealth managers can do to help kids cope gracefully with money and privilege.
Well, there's a great deal that should be amplified about this headline. They're saying that if you're very rich, you got to watch out, because you got to be sure to put the money for your children in the hands of a wealth manager who will make sure that the children do not turn out like Paris Hilton. Now, the implication there, I don't know that much about Paris Hilton, but the implication is that she has squandered millions of dollars. But, of course, I guess she's also made a lot of money. Excuse me. She's also made a lot of money because she had her own television show for a while there. Maybe she still does. I guess it's her and her sister, about surviving on the farm and these other places, and I'm sure she got paid for it. But that's beside the point.
Yes, Harry, I think that also means behaving in a certain manner.
Yes, being in the public eye all the time about doing things that you're not proud of, especially having to do with money. But there are a lot of things that need to be corrected about that. First of all, you know and I know that I'm not going to suggest that you find the right wealth manager, because if you have a permanent portfolio, you are protected from all that comes. If you have a wealth manager, you are protected only if the wealth manager can outguess the future. And that's a pretty lame read to rely on. Secondly, this doesn't apply just to the very wealthy. It applies to anyone who has any money whatsoever to pass on to his children. Or even if you don't have money to pass on to your children, it is very, very important that your children understand where money comes from and what they have to do to make it, and what it really is, the real world as far as money is concerned. And I don't care whether you just barely get by and your children are going to have to make it entirely on their own, or you have $50,000 to leave to your children, or $10,000, or $500,000, or $1,000,000. All of this applies. The understanding of money and how you earn it and what you have to do to preserve it and so on. So it is very important in my eyes that you be able to teach your children some basic concrete things about money, so that wherever they wind up with whatever they have, they can deal with the real world. And I, unfortunately, for this program, do not have personal experience in this regard. My first wife and I were divorced when my child was 7 years old, and my first wife, my ex-wife, raised the child. I was in, for most of her upbringing, I was in Vancouver and then in Zurich, and my child was still in Los Angeles living with my first wife, and so she had everything to do with it, and so I have no real-world experience with this. And I'm not going to pretend that I do, but of course I have some ideas about it, which will be interjected here and there along in this show. But John has had real-world experience, and we discussed this past week, and I found what he had to say very, very interesting. I also had a talk many years ago with Terry Coxon, the founder of the Permanent Portfolio Family of Funds and then the Passport Financial Company, who's been on this show to discuss various ways to protect your own wealth. But the discussion we had years ago was about how he taught his children about money, and I found it fascinating. So at the bottom of the hour, Terry is going to come on and explain what he taught his children, and I think you're going to find that very interesting. Now, even if you don't have children, I think just these ideas about money will trigger some thoughts in your mind that will be very, very helpful in taking care of your own money. And, of course, if you do have children, I think you'll find this very interesting. And if you have some ideas about what we're talking about here, we'd be glad to hear them. If you've had some success in getting through to your children and you can point to some real-world experiences, boy, we'd like to hear them. It's, the number is 1-800-259-9231, or you can email us at question@harrybrown.org, question@harrybrown.org, or call us at 1-800-259-9231. All right, John, I'm going to ask you to take it over now and tell us about the experience with your lovely daughter.
Thank you. Well, before we get to my personal experience, I'd like to go back to the headline.
Sure.
And the headline presupposes that your wealth has much of anything to do with your children. And I think that what that means is it presupposes that you're going to be leaving wealth to your children, or one way or another, your personal wealth is there to assist and bail out and comfort your children. And that's anything but a given. There are two very, very strong differences of opinion on this particular subject. And our investment advisory roles down through the years, I've spoken with a number of very, very wealthy clients who were facing this very dilemma, and it falls into two categories. One category, and this is a category that's very hard to resist, and that is, sure, I'm going to leave my wealth to my children or child, and I'll leave it to them so that they can get it when they're 18, they come of age, and then my wealth will be yours, and it's going to pave the road to easy times and happiness. The second point of view is one that says, absolutely not. I'm not leaving my children one single penny. And the reason I'm not leaving them one single penny is because if they receive that money, or if they know they're going to receive it, it completely changes their total attitude and approach to life. Now, within those two opposites, there is a happy medium, and this is a happy medium that I've suggested in the past, and that happy medium would be, well, if you have a great deal of wealth and you're going to give it to your children, make it available to them only upon reaching a certain very mature age, say age 50 or age 55, because by then, the children will have learned to fend for themselves. They'll learn that there's not a safety net up under them to pick up for any mistakes that they make. And the reason I've suggested this is because it seems clear to me that having money under you as a safety net robs the individual child of a great, great, important aspect of their lives. I'll explain that when we come back after the break. Meanwhile, this is John Chandler with Harry Brown on the Money Talk. If you have any questions or like to insert, feel free to give us a call. Meanwhile, stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
This is Harry Brown. Have you lost money in stocks over the past few years? From 2000 through 2002, the stock market lost a third of its value. But during those 3 years, a bulletproof portfolio gained 9%. And over the past 34 years, such a portfolio gained an average of over 9% per year throughout periods of prosperity, inflation, and recession, with no wide swings in value. My book, Failsafe Investing, shows how you can have that kind of portfolio for yourself. And now you can download the book for only $9.75. You don't have to rely on alleged market wizards or stay up late worrying about your savings. Failsafe Investing will show you how to have the security that you crave. Go to libertyfree.com to see a sample chapter of Failsafe Investing and then start protecting the savings you've worked so hard to acquire. That's libertyfree.com.
Welcome back. This is Harry Brown with John Chandler, and this is the Money Show, which you can participate in if you like, if you got something to say about the education of your children or anybody else's children about money. 1-800-259-9231, because teaching your child about money is the subject today. And John, we were right in the middle of you beginning to explain what you had done with your child, but you began by giving us some ideas about the whole format of this. How much should you leave to your children? And you had a what we might call a dramatic innovation there. And why don't you summarize that and then go on with the education of your daughter Shannon?
Okay, Harry, what we're really talking about is teaching or learning and or having respect for financial responsibility. And as I was saying, there are two rules of thought concerning leaving money to their children. One school of thought is leave them everything and let them have at it. Another train of thought, I think equally valid, or in my opinion maybe more so, is not leave them anything, or if you are going to leave them something, don't let them know it at all, or and if they do know it, I'll make them set up and know that they're not going to get it until they're age 50 or so, by which time they will have learned the reality of life and have to fend for themselves and know that there was no safety net under them that was going to catch them no matter what mistakes they made. And I was going on to say that they're, in addition to making an entirely different kind of person, and this I've noticed in my own business life over the last 45 years, I've dealt with people who inherited a lot of money, and I've dealt with people who were, in fact, self-made individuals. And I can tell you, without a doubt, I would rather have a beer or have dinner with the person who was the, quote, self-made individual than the person who had inherited their money. Now, that's not to say that if you inherit money and you use that money to grow the money, to increase the value, increase the net worth, it's a significant accomplishment, and it's something that needs to be given credit. However, it's an entirely different issue if you started out with a lot of money and you had a lot of room for mistakes than if you have to start and fend for yourself. And it's the fending for yourself. It's the knowing that you are responsible, not somebody else. Knowing that you individually are responsible for your own financial well-being that I think makes the difference. And it's the difference not only in their attitudes toward money, financial responsibility, the attitudes toward earning and saving, but it's a more fundamental difference in that. And the more fundamental difference is if someone is given everything, or the money, or the means to achieve whatever he may want, desire, then how in the world can that person have a sense of pride? How can he have a sense of self-respect? How can that individual have a sense of accomplishment? And by giving the money to your children indiscriminately, you rob your children of the possibility of having that neat sense of pride, of responsibility, of sense of accomplishment. And think what a robbery that is. You remove self-respect. And that is one of the most important fundamental characteristics of a human being, is self-respect, no matter what their walk of life, no matter what their financial situation is. You can tell the difference. between a person who has true self-respect and one who does not. And by giving them the money that you have without any limitations, by making life easy for them, it simply removes their self-respect, and it shows in every contact that you have with that person. So that's the way I feel about it, and that, in fact, is the way that I think the majority of our wealthy clients ended up feeling about it after some lengthy discussion. So I think that's the most important aspect of this entire question. Now, in addition to that, there are different little things that we can do as parents and as grandparents to help our children and grandchildren along in understanding about money and understanding concepts of financial responsibility. And it begins as early as three, for example. If you're a parent, take your three-year-old to the grocery store, to the market, and explain that when you pick up a head of cabbage, that that costs money. And explain that somebody has to earn that money so you can buy the things that you need. Oh, sure, I hear you say now, well, a three-year-old can't grasp the concept of financial responsibility. And, well, that's exactly right. But when you're teaching a two-year-old or one-year-old to count one, two, three, four, he certainly doesn't understand calculus. But it's beginning with one, two, three, four that lays the groundwork that you continue to build on throughout their life to the point that they can understand differential equations. So start early and teach your children the value and the nature of money. Then there comes the question of give your child an allowance or don't give your child an allowance. And most people, including myself, are divided on that issue. Some people say they should not have an allowance. They should have certain chores to do, and in reward for doing those certain chores as members of family, like everybody else in the family has to do, then they get a certain amount of money or a certain allowance for that. But whatever the rationale is, it should be very clear that the allowance, if you give them an allowance, is all the money they're going to get. Period. You should not succumb to just this one time, please, please, please. When you succumb to that, you've lost the battle. What they should understand and understand explicitly if they have an allowance is that that's all they're going to get. Any other money that they receive from you, they must earn. They must earn it from you, the family, or should earn it from somewhere else. And another thing about an allowance is I'm not too keen on withholding an allowance if your child doesn't fulfill a responsibility. I think if you have an allowance, then choose another form of discipline. Because it's hard for a child to learn budgeting skills if he doesn't know how much money will be coming in each week. And budgeting skills and understanding if they spend it all the first day, it's gone. They got to wait another week. That's an important lesson to learn, and you must not succumb to it. You must. That's tough luck. We'll get on with some more tips about how to teach children or anybody responsibility. And I think this is a valuable lesson to learn if you're in the lower economic strata as if you're in the upper economic strata.
Sure. And when we come back, we're going to have Terry Coxon with us. And this is The Money Show, brought to you in part by the Permanent Portfolio Family of Funds. And we will be right back after this break, so don't go away.
This is Harry Brown. My book, Fail-Safe Investing, will tell you what you need to know to create your own bulletproof investment portfolio. One that will protect you whatever the future brings. Prosperity, inflation, recession, even depression. And it will protect you without your having to predict the future or tinker with the portfolio. Best news of all, at LibertyFree.com, you can download the book for only $9.75. That's right, just $9.75. You can read the book on your computer screen or print it out and read it in your easy chair. If you're tired of losing money on your investments, tired of the pressure of looking for the best investments, Here's the way to have your own bulletproof portfolio, no matter how big or small your savings. To get a free sample chapter from Failsafe Investing, just go to libertyfree.com right now. That's libertyfree.com.
Welcome back. This is Harry Brown with John Chandler, and I'm proud to introduce our guest for the day, Terry Coxon, who is the manager of Passport Financial, an offshore trust company that does a lot of good for people who are trying to make sure their assets are not stolen, expropriated, sued to death, and other means of expropriation. Terry and I, as I mentioned earlier, talked a few years ago about the education of his children. He has five very outstanding children, and I'm always glad to see them whenever I visit Terry. I'm always hopeful that one or two of them will be home and I get a chance to see them, but I don't get that opportunity very often. In any event, Terry, thank you so much for joining us today. And perhaps we could begin by you just telling us first where your five children are right now, even though that is not directly connected to the education on money.
Well, given their ages, I don't always know where they are. But
you know at least what college your children are in tonight.
Yes. Our oldest boy is a mathematician, works for a consulting firm in San Francisco. Our oldest daughter is a psychologist, and now she's studying to become a registered nurse. Our number two daughter recently graduated from college and is planning to go to law to graduate school, get an advanced degree in history. And the two younger boys are in college right now.
Good. Well, let's go back to the education of your children about money and just start at the beginning the way you did with them and tell us what you told them.
Well, the first thing they need to learn is how to count.
Mm-hmm.
And money is a good device for teaching kids to count. And at the same time as they learn to count, they're learning about money. The way we started with the oldest boy with the ice cream truck. Lived in a neighborhood that had a regular ice cream truck every day come around, play its tune, and announce itself for all the kids in the neighborhood. The most expensive item that they sold was 75 cents. I think that was the Super Pop. And the least expensive item was a popsicle for 25 cents. So what I did with our oldest boy was to give him 35 cents every day. That allowed him to get the cheapest item, and if he wanted the Super Pop, he could save what was left after the simple popsicle, or he could get nothing for a few days and then get Super Pop. It was really up to him, but he had some exposure to the choices and to the idea of budgeting. But for that to work, he needed to know how to count. So every morning we'd sit down on the floor and I'd dump out a jar of coin, and we'd count some pennies, and then I'd explain how many pennies were equal to a nickel, and how many equal to a dime, and how many nickels were equal to a dime, and so forth.
Terry, how old was Tim at this point?
Oh, he was maybe 5 years old.
Before that, probably.
Well, possibly. This is, this is going back into prehistoric days for me.
Okay, go ahead.
But that was an introduction to counting. Of course, he's the one who became a mathematician. I don't know whether he took to the counting because he was set to be a mathematician or the counting prepared him to be a mathematician. he learned accounting, and he learned the idea of budgeting. You can spend it now, or if you don't spend it now, you have more to spend tomorrow.
Did you introduce the concept of earning at some point?
Yes, there were jobs to be done. They all had chores, and if something special needed to be done, then I would pay for a special job.
So the allowance, in effect, was like a retainer for just doing the normal chores around the house, and then if there was a special job, you contracted with them to...
Well, the allowance situation got progressively more complex, and I'm not sure that everyone wants to deal with all the complexities we got into, but what we ended up with was a three-element program. There was a certain amount that you just plain got, no matter what.
For being alive.
Yeah, for being alive, for breathing. And then there was an additional element that you got if you did all your chores. And then there was a third element that you got, which was interest on your savings.
Mm.
Now, for the interest to have any excitement for a little kid, it has to be a phenomenal rate.
Not 3%.
a rate per week rather than a rate per year.
Yeah.
But they caught on to that, and they saw the additional reward for saving, for not spending right now.
Well, that's pretty interesting. I had never heard that before, of a parent paying interest on a child's savings. That makes a lot of sense. And as you say, it has to be a noticeable amount, or else it's going to be worthless.
That's right. I mean, when you're starting with $12, the interest rate has to be phenomenal to provide a noticeable result.
Sure. Well, that's very good. John, do you have any questions?
Yeah, Terry, did you set up a bank account where they would have like a savings book where they could see that in tangible terms, or was that all handled in-house?
No, they had savings accounts at a bank.
Would you recommend that for young children?
I certainly would. Because that gives them, one, a place to put money away, not have it lying around. And secondly, it gives them some exposure to financial institutions, how they work. It exposes them to accounting. They get statements that they can read. I think it's a very valuable thing.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And so what you have done here, as I see it, is you've introduced just about all the concepts that have to do with money, the starting with counting and going all the way to a bank account. Probably the only thing that hasn't been touched on here is actually making an investment of some kind, and that is an advanced thing. I mean, you really shouldn't be making either investments or speculations until you've grasped the concept of a bank account and interest in these other things. But we'll talk about that a little when we come back. We're going to take a break now, and we have one more segment with Terry Coxon. So if you have a question for him, give us a call at 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231, and we'll be right back. This is Harry Brown with John Chandler, and our guest today, Terry Coxon, who is talking about the education of his children. And John, since you have had experience educating a child, and I have not, I'm going to turn it over to you to ask Terry some questions. John, take it away.
All right, thanks. Well, Terry, we have your kids in grade school, but they don't stop growing. They continue to get older, and I was wondering... If you did, at what point did you start talking to your children about long-term goals? such as saving for college or a car. In my case, I started talking about that specific group of subjects between, I'd say 11 and 14. And also, did you encourage your children to earn extra money by mowing the lawn or babysitting? And if so, was that money that they could spend any way they wanted to? A portion of it go to savings and they could squander? Or exactly how did you handle this issue of longer-term goals and part-time jobs?
Well, I thought of the interest rate program, the interest on the savings program, as the summary for all those topics. If the interest rate is attractive and it gets the child's attention, then I think everything else is going to fall into place. We didn't talk about long-term goals in particular. The notion I was trying to communicate was that it's better to have more money than to have less money. That's pretty obvious. Once the idea is on the table, and the interest program was a way to encourage saving, so they get the experience of the accumulation of money and the options that make available to them. For jobs, they all had jobs of one kind or another. We had a couple of swimming pool lifeguards, and we had babysitters, and when they got older into high school, we had some carpenters, a building demolition expert, and the jobs were all jobs that they got on their own. I encouraged the idea of getting a job, but nobody ever accepted my direction on how to do it or where to go get it. We never had a lawn cutter. Although I did try to promote that, but it just didn't sell.
So I guess at an earlier age, they did could have performed jobs like lawn cutting or babysitting.
Yes. Well, we had babysitter.
Yes, but at an older age, like ages 16 to 18, the encouragement, did it become stronger, or was the interest?
At that point, I didn't need to encourage it. They went out and got jobs.
Oh, great. And so the interest incentive was the common denominator that produced a lot of additional ideas. It influenced the notion of saving and saving for whatever they may want, because one of the values I think is very, very important to instill in children at an early age and throughout the time when they leave home is the idea of avoiding debt, because I've always had the concept that the more your level of freedom of choice, freedom of life, is closely tied to the level of debt. And the more money you have, the less debt you'll ever need, and as a consequence, the more free you will be. Would you tend to agree with that, Gary?
I certainly do, and that's a very healthy notion.
Do you think your children have avoided debt pretty well?
Yes, they have. One of my daughters bought a car, and she got it with a car loan, but she poured every penny she could get her hands on paying down the car loan.
To get rid of it as fast as possible?
Yeah, you know, very quickly.
What about, Terry, the idea of credit cards? Say, for example, when one of your children goes off to college, do you think it's a good idea to have a credit card and have it extremely defined parameters about how it will be used in case of emergency and so forth, and monitoring it very closely, just giving them that flexibility in the case it may be needed when you're 2,000 miles away?
Well, I don't think it's a good idea to give someone a credit card. Even if you proclaim rules and limitations on it, it's available only for emergencies. The availability of the credit card, I think it's going to attract emergencies. And you're just going to have more emergencies than you would have otherwise. Lots of people have gotten through college without a credit card.
Yeah.
And it can be done.
Terry, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And what you've done is to stimulate the thinking of people, I think, in the audience to come up with their own ideas and to adopt some of what you've said and maybe modify some of what you've said to their own circumstances. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay. And we'll be back to wrap this up in just a couple of minutes.
This is Harry Brown. Have you lost money in stocks over the past few years? From 2000 through 2002, the stock market lost a third of its value. But during those 3 years, a bulletproof portfolio gained 9%. And over the past 34 years, such a portfolio gained an average of over 9% per year throughout periods of prosperity, inflation, and recession, with no wide swings in value. My book, Failsafe Investing, shows how you can have that kind of portfolio for yourself. And now you can download the book for only $9.75. You don't have to rely on alleged market wizards or stay up late worrying about your savings. Failsafe Investing will show you how to have the security that you crave. Go to libertyfree.com to see a sample chapter of Failsafe Investing, and then start protecting the savings you've worked so hard to acquire. That's libertyfree.com.
Music is to remind you that money is something to be enjoyed and not to agonize over, that if you've managed to accumulate just even a little bit of money, then take joy in that fact, whether or not you spend it, save it, invest it, but don't agonize over it. And we come back to where we began. You do not need a money manager, and in fact, it is the most dangerous thing you can do is to sign your money over to someone else, to have power of attorney over your money. So no matter how much or how little you have, it is your responsibility to take care of it. And fortunately, that's not very difficult. Using the permanent portfolio strategy, which we have not gone into today, but we do from time to time on this show, being prepared for whatever comes with a balanced and diversified portfolio, you can take care of the money that you've accumulated, and you can teach your children to take care of the money that they accumulate without having to teach them about moving averages and waves and all of this other stuff, contrary opinion and whatnot. It's very, very simple, and that's why we have this program, to help you simplify your life. And as far as teaching your children, I think you've gotten some ideas today that may be foreign to you from either John or Terry, but that's good. I want you to think about them. I want you to adapt them to your own circumstances, to your own children's capabilities, and so on, whether it's teaching them to count, teaching them to invest their money, teaching them to earn interest, whatever aspect of it may be, then that's up to you. John, you have anything to add?
Well, not much. I think it should be a hope. It's been refreshing to me, and I do hope it's been refreshing to our listeners. There's not much else I would add other than I'd like to reinstill the idea that your level of freedom is closely tied to your level of debt, so minimize debt, you'll have more freedom. Avoid credit card debt, because if you're earning 4% on a savings account and you're charged 16% for credit card, that doesn't make any sense. Another thing I'd like to encourage is to encourage your young people to open a retirement account as quickly as possible. A 40-year-old invests $20,000 a year for retirement will end up with only half the amount of assets as a 21-year-old who invests $5,000 a year. So even the smallest savings can turn into a respectable sum of money if given enough time. And so I'd encourage you to encourage your children to open a IRA retirement account as quickly as possible, save 18, say 18 years old, and choose your college wisely. There's really very little difference between a $30,000 private college and a $12,000 state university. They're 100 times more to learn in any one of those colleges than they can learn anywhere, and it's not important unless you're going to the law or some other equally elitist profession. Otherwise, it doesn't much matter where you go to school. It matters what you learn.
Yes, and what you learn will depend upon how interested you are in learning wherever you are. If you want to dig for it, you'll get it in either kind of university. That's a very good point, John. Thank you so much. And our thanks to Terry Coxon for joining us today, and thanks to John Harmon in Minnesota for taking care of things, and most of all, thanks to you for being with us. Please come back next week. This is Harry Brown with John Chandler. Goodbye.